For this evening's service. Dear Heavenly Father, we love you. We thank you for your word. We thank you as we're going to be studying your word. Help me to do the best that I can at teaching tonight and help us to see what your plan is for the church and how we are to work together. In Jesus' name, amen. So, we finished the Lord's Prayer. I think I did as much as I could on that. And tonight is going to be more of an overview of Corinth, the Corinthian church, and what the attempt is to go to the first book of Corinthians. And the reason is because I want to look at blueprints to a healthy church. You say, why do you choose 1 Corinthians for blueprints to a healthy church? Because it wasn't healthy. And Paul's giving it blueprints or direction to be a healthy church, and we'll discuss that more tonight. So, a study of 1 Corinthians, ancient Corinth, the importance of the city of Corinth, and then four archaeological finds that prove that the Bible was right about Corinth. So those are the two topics I'm going to be speaking on tonight. The importance of the city of Corinth and the four archaeological finds in Corinth. All right, so Wednesdays, we're going to peel it back a little bit and start to develop my teaching. All right, and so you all be patient with me as I try to develop teaching through my Wednesday night services. And hopefully, at the end, I'll be able to preach and teach equally as we go on from here. So, first of all, the importance of the city. There's four things I want to discuss that makes ancient cities important tonight. The first is it was ideal for defense. In those days, if you were going to be an important city in ancient times, you had to be ideal for defense. It was geographically ideal. Trade and manufacturing made it important, the Isthmian Games and the designation for religious pilgrimages are the 5 things we'll discuss about what made Corinth an important city. All right, so the first thing, ideal for defense. There's two things that make it ideal for defense or factors of defense in the ancient time. The first is it had to be on a high location. It was very important that cities were on high locations for defense. And second, had to have a good, clean water source. Why am I going through all this? Because when we get into Corinth, and as I teach this, you're going to see some cultural things that are used right in the book that will help you understand to a deeper level what it's trying to say. Don't worry, it's only one service like this from going through the historical facts. And then we'll get into the book next week. In detail. So, the geographical location. This is Corinth right here, and this is the protective part of Corinth that you can see up there on the top. So, they call this a core Corinth or the higher Corinth. It has physical safety, and they also believe in this mythical safety that we'll get into there. In Corinth. So this would be lower Corinth right here, and that's where most of the city would be. But when there was an attack on Corinth, they would go up to the higher mountain there for that. Lower city was able to flee to the mountains to tactically advantage over the enemies, and they would run up the mountain if enemies came. It's a 5-kilometer tunnel was dug to provide protection against sieges. So as they went up the mountain, there's 3 gates that they would go through. The second gate they would go through had this tunnel system that they were able to walk through the tunnel. It was 5 kilometers, and it would go past that city, and they would be able to get food and water and bring it into the city itself. So The mythologically, the most famous temple to Aphrodite is at the top of the mountain. That's where the temple of Aphrodite would be, at the very top. We'll get into more of that later. Over six temples were present on the climb up, and historians say 26 sacred sites were provided on the way from the lower to the upper city. So what you're seeing in through this is a very pagan culture. This was the remains, some of the remains of the temple to Aphrodite right here. You see those pillars. Factors of defense in ancient time, they needed a good clean water source. And what this is, at the top of the mountain next to the temple of Aphrodite would be this spring, this inner spring that they were able to access. And it was 700 meters above sea level there. And what they would do is a spring of cold water, enough to allow 5,000 Corinthian people to drink from for an extended amount of time. I know this is kind of small, but you see the ancient geographical location of Corinth is something that is very important. There's Corinth right there, there's Athens, and in between it, we'll get into it, is a land place. So William MacDonald, in his Believer's Bible Commentary, explains the location of Corinth. Ancient Corinth was and is in the southern Greece, west of Athens, strategically situated on the trade routes in Paul's days. It became a great center for international commerce, and immense quantities of traffic came through this city. All right, so again, there's Athens, there's Corinth right there, and it's in Greece. The city of Corinth is in Greece. Greece has two parts, the mainland to the north, so that's where Athens is. Greece is, this is the mainland to the north. It would be the northeast, and then the Peloponnese to the south. All right, so here's the Peloponnese right here, this area right here to the southwest. Now, Corinth is on the northern tip of the Peloponnese and has access to a 6.3 kilometer wide isthmus. What is an isthmus? It's a thin strip of land that connects the mainland to the Peloponnese. So right here is this strip of land that Corinth sits on, and it's this strip of land that connects the Peloponnese part of Greece to the mainland of Greece right here. So you're getting the geological situation. You're seeing that the trade routes are something that's going to be majorly happening here. Just to give you an idea where it's setting, what's going on, why trade is so important, and be patient with me. You've never heard me preach like this before, so give me some time here. All right, so what's so important is you see Rome is right there, and what would happen is when they would come from Egypt or they come from Jerusalem or Asia, they would try to stay next to the land. They wouldn't go way out in the Aegean or Mediterranean Sea. They would try to stay close to land. And what would happen is it became a very important trade route to go through and cut off a lot of distance. We'll get into that. So Corinth was the crossroads of trade for the ancient world. Travel either had to go around the Peloponnese Peninsula or could go through the isthmus located in Corinth for world trade. So either the trade ships from Egypt would have to go around this way. Do you see they'd have to go around the Peloponnese Islands, or they'd have to go through this land, this little isthmus. Besides being longer to go around by 200 kilometers, the peninsula was also more dangerous than being able to go through this thin strip of land here. All right? So Corinth is set, let's say, on a major gold mine for trade routes. This is a hugely important city in the ancient world, a very rich city in the ancient world, because all trade would flow through this Peloponnesian peninsula, or it would have to go through the isthmus located on Corinth. So, this guy right here, this somehow I hit, got out of that, Dad. Sorry, could you hit it again? Right there. And it's probably going to go to the beginning. How much you want to bet? Thank you for your patience as I get to where I'm supposed to be. All right. Getting to the importance of it geographically here, and we'll be this guy right here. His name is Strabo. He's a Greek scholar. He says this when speaking of the danger of ships having to go around that peninsula. Okay? This is what he has to say. Yes, say, if sailors pass the southern tip twice, they ought to forget their families. So there's a lot of shipwrecks that's going on if they go through the peninsula instead of going through the isthmus on Corinth. So everybody wanted to go through that landlocked place, and we'll show you how they did that in just a second. All right, so there's two. I'll get a better picture for that next time. There's two gulfs. There's the Gulf of Corinth and the Sinaitic Gulf, where Aegean Sea would meet there at Isthmus, and that Isthmus place in this area right here. These are two huge harbors that are located here, and they're very important for this. Corinth built a land bridge between the Gulf of the Saronic and the Gulf of the Corinth harbors. Okay, so on one side of the Isthmus, you had the Gulf of the Saronic harbor that's coming up to the Aegean Sea. And then on the other side, you had the Gulf of Corinth. And that's, once you pass that, that's in Corinth, and there's a huge harbor there. They would have these huge, like, sled carts that had steel tracks. It's almost, I was looking at pictures of it, I should have put a picture in there, but the pictures of it almost looks like a huge railroad cart. And it was very wide. If the ship was small enough, they just put it right on the cart and cart the ship right across. If the ship was too big, they would take all the goods off of the ship, place it on the cart, and either half of the crew would go with the cart across to the other side while the ship sailed around the Gulf with the other half. Or, if the merchant was rich enough, they would just have two ships. One would be on one side of the Gulf, the other would be on the other side of the Gulf, and then they just ship the trades that way through that. Now, if anything teaches us something, there was great, it got locked there. So what happens when sailors have a lot of time and they don't have to sail? Well, they spend money and they go into the town, and all sorts of bad things happen because they're away from home. One historian says that Corinth was the Los Angeles, New York, and Las Vegas of the ancient world at the time. So what stayed in Corinth, what was done in Corinth, stayed in Corinth. It wasn't a good place. So Paul's coming into a very rich society that has a lot of morality problems. Does everybody understand that? So the crew would go around and they would wait at the harbor while they were in that locked position, while other merchants would go across. Trade and manufacturing, this won't be a long one. They were known for manufacturing for their bronze pottery. I hope I spelled that right. It looks like I spelled the poetry, but it's supposed to be pottery. And marble. Josephus Fabius suggested that the bronze used in Solomon's temple was Corinthian bronze. I mean, that's not in the Bible, but it's a suggestion that Josephus the historian suggested. All right. The Agora was a marketplace of Corinth. Archaeologists, and that's what that is right there. This is the marketplace. Archaeologists have discovered 44 shops along with 33 taverns. Most of these shops are 9 to 12 feet wide, 12 feet deep, and 13 feet high, with a 7-foot high door to let light in. So these shops would be all over the marketplace in this area right here, and there would be an upper portion, a loft in some of the building where the store owner would stay, and then his workers may sleep on the floor. But it was all these small shops in this area where the merchants and the sailors would come in and buy things. So the Isthmus Games is another thing. So the first Isthmus Games were held in 582 BC. The festival includes athletes and musical competitions to honor the god Poseidon. And it was held in the spring of the second and fourth year of each Olympiad at Poseidon's rural sanctuary on Isthmus of Corinth, the small neck of land that connects the Peloponnesian Peninsula with the central Greece. Since it was easy to reach both from land and sea, the Isthmus was a natural meeting place. The festival was open to all Greeks, and the Isthmus Games were especially popular with Athens through the Hellenes boycott. The Isthmus Games were used by many as a forum for political propaganda. All right, so the winners of the Isthmus Games received the wreath of celery. Later, the wreath was altered such that it consisted of pine leaves and called Isthmus Pine. Victors could also be honored with the statue or an ode. Besides these prizes of honor, the city of Athens awarded victorious Athens with lots of money. Okay? Basically, that's what it's saying. So the Isthmus Games were the second most popular athletic event in the ancient world. Only the Olympics were more famous. Held every other year, there were many advents. The athletes were... Advents. It's not the right word. There was many competitions, is what I'm trying to say. Is advents the right word? Events. The athletes were held to strict rules, which if not obeyed would mean immediate expulsion from the games. Paul referenced this fact in 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27. Know ye not, why don't we turn there so we're using our Bibles. I don't want us not to use our Bibles. 1 Corinthians 9. I was looking and doing some research, my favorite way, on YouTube. And there was this man that he must have a bigger church, but his church allowed him to... I'm not hinting at anything, Bethel, okay? But they allowed him to go to Corinth, and he filmed all of this. Like, he filmed all of the ancient places. It was really interesting. If I remember, I'll try to send that link out to you guys so you can watch it. If this kind of stuff interests you. 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize, so run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth air, but I keep under my body, and bring it into subjection, lest by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. So this fits into the culture of Corinth because of the Isthmus Games. And he's actually bringing the culture into his preaching and teaching. All right? So we can think of that. That he's using the thought process of this to explain this. All right. There would be a racing track for one of the Isthmus games. We know people attended to watch the Isthmus games would stay in tents. We also know that Paul was a tent maker according to Acts 8:3. And because he was of the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation they were tent makers. He's talking about Aquila and Priscilla. He stayed with them. And we know that, and we'll get into why we know this, we can track the time exactly when he was there, and he would have been there during the Isthmus Games. And later on I'll tell you why we know that. We also know that Paul is in Corinth at a certain time, Acts 18:12, and when Gallio was the deputy of Achaia, the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat. So he is in Corinth when Gallio is the deputy or the in charge of Achaia. That's very important because there's a historical artifact that we will have. And by the way, I'm going to send this in a PDF file on our website. So if you want the pictures and my misspellings, you can have them in just a few days, okay? In fact, Emily, please go through that and fix my misspellings, okay? Please, and thank you. This time was during these Isthmus games that Paul would have been there making tents. So they would have these, and I think I have a few pictures. No, I don't. The Temple of Aphrodite. So here's the religion of Corinth. And we're going to get into some things. We're not going to get into detail, but the religion was really bad. The Temple of Aphrodite was dedicated to the god of fornication. Okay? It was the most important temple out of the 26 different religious temples of the day that were located in Corinth. With over a thousand male and female prostitutes, the travelers of the cities were surrounded by sexual temptation. They would go up the mountain during the day to pay for the religion. Fornication in that day was part of their religion. And they would pay the temple prostitutes to commit fornication during the day. And then the temple prostitutes would come down the mountain at night for anyone that didn't make it up the mountain during the day. So, obviously, they were quite busy. And that's sad that that culture was that bad. Another is the Temple of Aesculapius. The Temple of Aesculapius. This is one of the ancient sites. And you can go there in Corinth and you can actually walk into these temples and see them. You can walk into the same buildings Paul may have walked into that day. Obviously not the same looking, but that would be kind of cool, wouldn't it? Like to walk into a 2-millennia-old building and look inside of it. That would be quite interesting. So the Temple of Aesculapius was a temple made to the god of healing. There were 3 such temples that were in Corinth during the time of Paul and were also places where the sick would stay, just like a hospital. There were usually accessible streams in the hospital for fresh water. So you could go down into a certain place within there, and there'd be a spring right there that you could get fresh water in. These are, many times, there were shops that would be next to the temple hospitals that would sell terracotta or wax molds of body parts that was damaged, and the individual would buy it and take it to the temple to be prayed over. Paul may be alluding to this in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 12 and 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 12 and verse 26. Here we read, "For as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ." And we can jump down to verse 26. "And whether one member suffer or all the members suffer with it, or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it." So they have found wax models in archaeology of any part of the body you can think of, even the brain. So I heard somebody said that in ancient times they wouldn't know what a brain was. And I thought of that person, you don't have a brain. Because they knew what brains were. They weren't stupid Neanderthal men that didn't know anything. They were very brilliant people that lived in that day. And I didn't provide pictures, but you see legs and feet. Sometimes when you're going through some of this ancient stuff, you have to be careful because it's not proper to show to everybody. So legs and feet are proper, hopefully. All right. There was also a Jewish synagogue. They believe that the Jewish synagogue was in this part because there was a main road, and we'll get to that main road in just a second with archaeological finds, that went down the main street of Corinth. And they believe that a Jewish synagogue was in that main strip. So we'll discuss why we know there was a synagogue of Jews in Corinth when we look at four archaeological finds. Paul does go to Jewish synagogue in Corinth. And we can look at that in Acts 18. Acts 18. If I had some money and time, I'd try to buy replicates of some of this stuff. But I'm sure it costs a lot of money. Acts chapter 18 and verse number 3. And because he was in the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation were tent makers, and he reasoned in the synagogue, verse 4, every Sabbath day, and persuaded the Jews and the Greeks. So he's in Corinth in Acts chapter 18. He's going to the synagogue, reasoning with the Jewish people. All right. Acts 17, 1 through 3. Now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where was a synagogue of the Jews. And Paul, as his manner was, went in unto them, and three Sabbath days reasoned with them out of the Scriptures, opening in alleging that Christ must needs have suffered and risen again from the dead, and that Jesus, whom I preach unto you, is Christ. So it was his custom to go into this. Now, for the end, we're going to go through four archaeological finds that prove the Bible. It was pretty amazing. The first archaeological find is Galileo's inscription. The second is discovery of the synagogue. The third is the Bema seat. The fourth is Erastus. Erastus is a person. And we'll get into that in just a second. So, Galileo's inscription. That is, right there, Galileo's inscription that they found in archaeology. They dug it up, and what's important is the words that are written on it. Okay? And what it shows us is the inscription also states that the proconsul or governor of the province of Achaia was Junius Galileo, and a friend of Empress Claudius, Tiberius Claudius Caesar, Germanicus' highest priest, invested with tribunician authority for the 12th time in 52 AD, claimed imperator of the 26th time, and my friend and proconsular. So, Emperor Claudius is writing this about Galileo, and it's inscripted in this stone, and it gives us the time that he would have been in office. Galileo served a short term as proconsul of Achaia from late 51 AD to 52 AD, and is also known from Roman writings of the 1st and 2nd centuries, such as Caecius, Deus, Senecus, and Tacitus. This Roman politician had his official residence at Corinth, the capital of the province, where he encountered the Apostle Paul around 51 AD. So this is a very important find to establish dates of when Paul was there, and they can establish many dates by this archaeological find, the Galileo inscription. All right. So, as a provincial governor, Galileo would have heard the most important case at the Bema seat. In one instance, the Jew of the synagogue, who were opposed to the gospel, dragged Paul before Galileo, who was uninterested in being stationed in Corinth and stated he was unwilling to judge the accusation. His judgment probably fell under what the Romans called cognition extra ordinarium, in which the judge could decide to accept or decline a novel accusation. And Galileo stated, and his statement is found in the Bible, in Acts 18, 12 through 17. Let's turn there and we'll read it together. Therefore, 11 and 17. Acts 18, 12 through 17. And when Galileo was the deputy of Achaia, the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat, saying, "This fellow persuaded men to worship God contrary to the law." And when Paul was now about to open his mouth, Galileo said unto the Jews, "It is where a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, O ye Jews, reason, would that I should bear with you. But if it be a question of words and names and of your law, look ye to it. For I will be no judge of such matters." And they drave them from the judgment seat. Then all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the chief ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. And Galileo cared for none of those things. So Galileo is right here in Acts chapter 17, which tells us exactly when Paul would have been in Corinth. So the philosopher Seneca's brother of Galileo implies that the proconsul left Achaia early because of distaste for the area, which can be seen in his apathetic behavior in Acts. The Galileo inscription is an important artifact which not only confirms that Galileo was the prefect of Achaia, based in Corinth at the time of Paul, as Luke records in Acts, but the inscription also is a precise chronological anchor for the book of Acts, which places Paul in Corinth in 51 AD and helps determine a timeline for Paul and his travels. And that's the source I got it from. Discovery of the synagogue. Let's see. Good. So the Lechian Road, I'm probably not saying it right, but that's how it's spelled, is the main road of Corinth. It was a huge road. And what they would have while you were going down this road is you'd have different doors or outposts. And one of the top of those doors was a lintel, or the doorpost, with this, we'll show it to you. It's right there. And it has the words Jewish synagogue on it. Okay? So, the inscription is crude lettering on the lintel stone was found near the entrance to the form of the Lechanaon Road. Since stones were often scattered from their original location, it is by no means certain that the original synagogue was in this area. However, the size of the stone suggests that it may not have been moved far from its original location. The lintel stone dates from three or more centuries after the time of the first followers of Jesus lived in Corinth. Since new synagogues were frequently erected on sites of previous ones, the location at the entrance to the forum might have been where Priscilla and Aquila taught. At this point in time, many of the early Christians still considered themselves Jews and participated in synagogue functions. So there's this huge stone that says there was a synagogue nearby Corinth because of the size of the stone. They say it was very big, so it was most likely not carried from further away. All right, the Bema seat, or the judgment seat. This is right here, the Bema seat. The person on the Bema seat was the highest official in Corinth in Paul's time. It would have been Junius Galileo during Paul's time. The purpose of the Bema seat is observation. So this is in the Oregon, or the marketplace. And in that marketplace is this huge platform where a seat is on top. There the highest person would be sitting on that seat watching over it. So it's for observation. commendation of the emperor. So if the emperor or a higher ranking official wanted to give somebody commendation or praise, they would do it from this place on the bema seat right here. Then if you notice, there's this little tiny post right here, and that's for the commendation, condemnation for wrong. And what would happen is somebody at the bema seat who was wrong would be whipped on that post on his knees. He would be chained to the post and whipped on that post down there with the highest official watching as he was whipped. So that's where that would be. Then we read 2 Corinthians 5, 9 through 10. Wherefore we labor that whether present or absent we may be accepted of him. For we must all appear before the bema, or the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone might receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. So God on his thrones observing us. Are we getting confirmation of our works? Commendation, praise for our works, or are we getting condemnation on our works? So that's the point. And it's a literal. So what I'm trying to say is Paul in his writing is taking literal places. Now he's writing Corinth from Rome, but as he's writing from it, he's taking literal things that are happening. Or some people say he's writing it from Rome. He's writing Romans from Corinth. Excuse me, I got that mixed up. He's writing Romans from Corinth. But at this time, he is literally, when he's talking to the Corinthians, he's talking about literal things that happen in their civil lives. They can see it. They can go out and they can picture the bema seat that he's talking about. All right, we're almost done. Aratus. This is the Aratus inscription right here. Now, all of us are adults, so Acts 19:22 is one point that talks about Aratus. So he sent into Macedonia two of them that ministered unto him, Timotheus and Aratus, but he himself stayed in Asia for a season. Romans 16:23, Gaius, mine host, and of the whole church salute you. Aratus, the chamberlain of the city, salute you, and the quarterus of a brother. Chamberlain is a very important position. It means the treasurer of the city of Corinth. Now, Rome didn't pick poor people to look after the money. They picked very rich people for two reasons. They knew rich people knew how to manage money, and they knew rich people had enough money so they wouldn't take more. That's what the thought process was. Okay? So we know that Aratus was a very rich man. And then 2 Timothy 4:20, Aratus abode at Corinth, but Trophimus have I left at Miletum sick. Okay? So we know where Aratus is. He's in Corinth. Now, two arguments made by the liberals. First, rich men would never serve a poor missionary. Rich men would never serve a poor missionary. And second, his name means sexy man, and who would name their child that? It literally means that. Erratic is the first part of his name. All right? So let's get past that quickly. We had no proof until 1929. In 1929, excavators discovered this inscription near a paved area northeast of the theater of Corinth. The inscription, which dates from the middle of the first century CE, reads, Aratus, in return from his Abelinship, laid the pavement at his own expense. So Aratus was a real person, and they discovered it. So all the liberals said, there's no person named Aratus. Paul's making this all up in his mind. And then in 19, so for many centuries, we just had to say we take this at faith, by faith. We know that this was there was somebody. And then what happens? Just recently, 1929, they open it up and archaeologists find this inscription naming the man's name. I'm sure Paul did that. No, he was a real man that existed in a real time. All right. So we know Corinth reached by Paul in his second missionary journey, and this is what happens in the traveling that comes. So William MacDonald says this: the Apostle Paul first visited Corinth on his second missionary journey in Acts 18. At first he labored among the Jewish people together with Priscilla and Aquila, his fellow tent makers. When most Jews rejected his message, he turned to the Gentiles in Corinth. Souls were saved through the preaching of the gospel, and a church was formed. Letters to the church. About 3 years later, when Paul was preaching in Ephesus, he received a letter from Corinth telling of serious difficulties in the assembly there in asking various questions as to matters of Christian practice. It was in answering to this letter that the first epistle to the Corinthians was written. The theme of the epistle is how to set right a worldly and carnal church that regards lightly the attitudes, errors, and actions that the apostles viewed with such alarm. As Moffat puts it, the church was in the world as it had to be, but the world was in the church as it ought not to be. Since such a situation is still common in many congregations, the relevance of 1 Corinthians is lasting. All right, overview is an introduction, chapter 1, 1 through 9, salutation 1, 1 through 3, thanksgiving in the introduction 1, 4 through 9. Disorders in the church, division among believers, immorality among believers, lawsuits among believers, moral laxness among believers, apostolic answers to church questions concerning marriage and celibacy, concerning eating meats offered to idols, concerning woman's head coverings, concerning the Lord's Supper, concerning the gifts of the Spirit and their uses in the church, and Paul's answer to deniers of the resurrection, certainty of the resurrection, considerations of objections to the resurrections, concluding appeals considering the resurrection, and Paul's final counsel concerning the collection, concerning his personal plans, closing exhortations and greetings. And I think we'll stop there for tonight. So, this is an outview. As we get ready, don't worry, I'm going to be preaching next week. We're going to be in the Bible all next week. But I'm giving you a structure of what's happening in Corinth. Dear Heavenly Father,